Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn from a study from the University of Sao Paulo how fish oil can help reverse a fatty diet, and how from Washington State University, green tea compounds show promise for treating rheumatoid arthritis, and from the Scripps Research Institute, how calcium can help you with learning and memory, and how from St. Louis University, diet and exercise both are equal to protect your heart health, and more on health and healing. Then we're going to do a series of short commentaries, overviews, something to help stimulate our thoughts. And then any of these that you feel inspire you to call in with a solution, please do so in our talkback segment. For example, the worst part of being homeless, no one sees you. And then the financial firms that have cornered the market on jails, how making a profit is more important than rehabilitation or anything else. And also, Homeland Security, it's a $1 trillion concept, but no one can describe it because it's out of control. Also, we're going to look at the arms industry and who they're donating the most money to, who they're putting their bets on to become president, and why. And I've written a commentary today, and I'm going to share it and ask for your feedback. I believe that we have gotten it all wrong. We've gotten it wrong on talking about Trump and Clinton and Obama. And I'm going to give specific insights as to why I feel we should pull back and completely refocus our attention. Otherwise, the people behind the scenes will continue to benefit. And from the environment, melting permafrost releases deadly long-dormant anthrax in Siberia. What's that coming at us? I'll let you know. My guest in the second part of our program is James Gundvig. He is an award-winning investigative journalist, and he's going to talk about why the CDC should be considered untrustworthy and corrupt to its core. This goes beyond the movie Vaxxed. It goes beyond Dr. Thompson. In fact, in one of my documentaries, I have testimony from one of the people at the CDC, one of the heads of a department at CDC, and up till this point, no one's been able to say anything about her until today. We will, in exclusive discussion, talk about who these different heads of department are. We'll name them, and then we will offer challenges to them. And where everyone in the media is talking about the pay-to-play with Clinton and the State Department, boy, have they missed one. A big one. We haven't. We'll share it. And I'm sure this is probably the first time you've heard about it. It's far more important in its significance than all the others combined. So as you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. We know that we should be taking the omega-3 fatty acids, that you can get them from fish, or better still, you could get them from avocados, and walnuts, and flax seeds, pumpkin seeds. According to the Journal of Physiology, these oils are extraordinarily important. Why? Because most people consume a high-fat diet. That's an unhealthy diet. It leads to higher incidence of prostate cancer, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, heart disease, clogging the arteries. It damages your major epithelial tissue lining your arteries. It's pro-inflammatory. All of these are bad things. But according to research at the University of Sao Paulo, it shows that giving fish oil prevents or reverses the harmful effects of a high-fat diet, and especially prevents obesity, and type 2 diabetes. So when you consider that if you were to have a high-fat diet that can lead to insulin resistance and weight gain and increased cholesterol, which can lead to obesity and type 2 diabetes, well, this research for the first time shows that consuming fish oil can prevent and counter the negative effects of a high-fat diet. So here's the takeaway message. All of us have had friends or family that we love dearly, but they're not listening to us. In fact, frequently they're annoyed that we even want to help them. So what if they didn't change their diet, unless they came to some epiphany and decided to, but instead we got them to take some fish oil after their main meal? Believe it or not, that can make a difference and could help save some of their lives. From Washington State University, a new study shows that the active ingredients, the EGCG compound that's in green tea, can help treat rheumatoid arthritis. Now, tens of millions suffer from rheumatoid arthritis. So if you have something this inexpensive and this natural, and this was published in the Journal of Arthritis and Rheumatology and was done at Washington State University in Spokane, and it can reduce swelling in the ankles in this particular study. Well, if it can reduce swelling in the ankles, it can reduce swelling in the hands, the feet, the wrists, the elbows, so not just there. And it also can help the immune system stop attacking the synovial tissue surrounding the joints, which causes the inflammation, the swelling, and the pain. And that in turn causes damage to the cartilage and bone. So just take green tea. I suggest you take 200 to 400 milligrams of decaffeinated green tea twice a day. Also from the Scripps Research Institute, they found that calcium is very important for bones and teeth, that we know, but it's also important for neurons, in particular its effect on processes such as learning and memory, and that we didn't know. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell Reports, and scientists from the Scripps Research Institute offer new insights how calcium in the mitochondria, the mito, M-I-T-O, chondria, C-H-O-N-D-R-I-A, that's the powerhouse of all cells at your energy factories, can be impacted, and that also can improve adult cognition and help in the development of the brain. So look carefully, are you getting enough calcium in the diet? I suggest about 800 milligrams a day. It could help your brain. And also, a new study from St. Louis University shows that we've always asked which works best for cardiovascular health, dieting or exercise or a combination of both. And they found that they both work together. And if you're overweight, you should have good diet and exercise. You shouldn't have one or the other. You should have both. And that just makes sense. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And from the Grieg Academy of Music Research in Norway, they found that soothing sounds of a mom singing can help premature newborns breathe easier. The analysis was over a dozen different clinical trials, and they found that music therapy helps stabilize premature newborns' breathing rate during their time in the neonatal intensive care unit. And for the most part, music therapy involved mothers singing to their babies. But it also can have mothers recorded their, in other words, they can record their voice, and it also makes a difference. Quote, full-term infants can recognize the mother's voice at birth. This connection is important to foster in premature infants whose last months of gestation are instead spent outside the womb. And plus, when mom and dad sing, they can change their voices, getting quieter, for example, when the baby seems to be falling asleep. In essence, music therapy begins in the womb. And that's important. So, here's my takeaway message. We have and should have in babies' rooms, hooked up to our cell phones or computers, a cam that shows how the baby's doing, and you also have audio. So if there's any distress, anything's wrong, you immediately can become aware of it. But also you can have recordings that can go on every hour. You can be singing lullabies. You can have lullabies with your voice overlaid. So you have very soft music and your voice. And even the idea that children love to be read stories at night. It's not just the story. They're actually bonding in a rhythm, a heart rhythm, with the sound and the cadence of the parent's voice, whether it's the mother or father or both. So what if the mother and father did a series of, let's say, 20 or 30 storybooks at night, bedtime stories, and behind that you put some very soft music? And so therefore at night, when the child is in bed, you can play that, and that's going into the brain, and it's recalibrating their biorhythms and heart rhythms with yours. Remember, everything in life is best when it harmonizes to a higher frequency. And that's why every mother in the world, no matter how distant or unrelated to any other person, goes through the same instinctual and intuitive way of singing, cuddling, and having that baby respond. So that's good, and that helps. That's the latest on health and nutrition. We're going to take a break, come back. We have a lot to share. Very packed show today. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm going to share some verbatim comments from a young victim of rape. And what is important is at the very end, what you're going to hear. And from that, I'm going to do a commentary. And then I'm going to open it up for you to be able to respond, because I believe that we're not looking in the right direction. We're looking where people want us to look. And this is entitled, I Thought You Should Know. So please keep in mind, everything I'm telling you is known. It is also known that the American media, depending upon what their own personal individual biases or collective biases or the overarching ideology of their medium is, in some cases it's subtle, where there is selective bias, where they simply won't report objectively, or they won't report at all. For example, we did a four-part series with one of the most important lawyers on social issues in criminal cases in American history, Danny Sheehan. And in this series, Danny Sheehan was able to detail from first-person experience people that he interviewed about the death of John F. Kennedy, who was involved, how they did it, names, dates, places, the shooter's name, who's still alive, one of the shooters, and how they financed, how they covered it up. Not a single member of the media covered it. I wanted to share that with you, because everything today is like watching David Copperfield. He's not an alchemist. He can't turn lead into silver or gold. He's an illusionist. An illusionist is successful because they get you looking to the left hand when the right hand is performing the magic. So the media gives you the talking points it wants you to focus on. So when we hear about how one person or two people in a race, political race, are bad, but we hear nothing about the other person, does that mean they're good? Does that mean they have already been vetted and they've been researched and they're fine? Their policies are fine? Now back to the story. I thought you should know. It was on Route 265, and it was on May 10th, 1975, two men lured an innocent 12-year-old girl into their car. Going to take her home. This 12-year-old girl was beaten so badly and raped so violently, she was in a coma for 5 days. I've seen the photographs of it. Her injuries were so severe, she would never be able to have a child. 41-year-old Thomas Alfred Talbot was found guilty. The evidence was damning. His underwear had semen mixed with the victim's blood. His lawyer pulled every dirty trick in the book. The lawyer attacked the victim with accusations at just 12 years old. Quote, from the testimony, she wanted an older man. Quote, she fantasized about being raped. End quote. Mr. Taylor's lawyer went so far as to suppress the damning physical, oral, and written evidence against Mr. Taylor, including evidence that the 12-year-old victim was a virgin before she was raped. Because the tactics used by Taylor's defense attorney, a verdict was given where a violent child molester and rapist got off with just 2 months' time served. After being beaten and raped by Mr. Taylor and then humiliated and dishonored by this lawyer, it took 20 years for her to come to terms with what happened to her on that day. Recently, she saw the same lawyer on TV and didn't like what she heard. She has a message she wants to deliver to that lawyer. Quote, you lied about me. End quote. Now, I have right in front of me the signature on the with a lawyer here. But I want you to hear in an interview long ago what that lawyer had to say, and listen carefully to her emotions when she's saying how it felt to get this rapist, assaultive person free and allow that 12-year-old to be scarred for life. Please listen. Okay, that was Hillary Rodham Clinton, attorney for the defendant. The date was the second day of July, 1975. I have the form right in front of me. Now, there'll be those who say, well, she was doing what a defense attorney should do. Whether you're guilty or innocent, your defense attorney is to get you off. Okay, you could say that. But then how later could she say she is an advocate for women's rights? There's something else I want you to hear. Do you remember when Bill and Hillary decided that they were going to balkanize Yugoslavia? Because it was a really evil person, much like Gaddafi and much like Saddam Hussein. But this one was the first that they would go after. His name was Milosevic. Remember that? And Slobodan Milosevic, the former president of Yugoslavia. And so that they justify going in there with NATO, same people they're using today, same people that Hillary Clinton used to go into Libya in Syria and other countries. But you didn't hear this from any of the major media, nor did you hear this in any of the debates. The ICTY, and that's the official legal organization that the International Criminal Tribunal of Yugoslavia exonerated the late Milosevic for war crimes committed in Bosnia War. which proves that NATO was wrong, that making him an official enemy was wrong, and that for over 20 years, neocon commenters and so-called liberal interventionists, pundits, have been telling us at every possible opportunity that Milosevic, a democratically elected leader in a country where over 20%, over 20 different political parties freely operated, he was an evil, genocidal dictator, and he was to blame for all the deaths in the Balkans in the 1990s. Yeah, but then they actually had the trial, and he didn't. He wasn't guilty. The International Criminal Tribunal of Yugoslavia conclusion that one of the most demonized figures of the modern era was innocent of the most heinous crimes he was accused of should have made headlines. How thorough was it? The report on his innocence is 2,590 pages. It's a verdict. There were others who were guilty. He wasn't one of them. In fact, he tried to intervene to have Karzdevic taken out of action. He wasn't successful. So there's a situation where NATO was wrong, but NATO has been wrong in all of these, and yet we're hearing how NATO has to be reinforced. We have to become even more aggressive. Okay? So that's part of it. I want to play a clip now, because back in 2006, many of you, it was packed, over 1,000 people attended the premiere of a film, a documentary I had done for the audience, and it was all about the Gulf War victims, Gulf War syndrome, and it was Gulf War syndrome killing our own. And what's important is that I had a choice near the end of the film to add some photographs or not. My producers did not want to add them. My editors didn't want to add them. But during the filming of this important documentary about how our Gulf War vets were succumbing to neurological damage, all forms of muscle wasting, heart problems, birth defects, because of the experimental vaccines that the Clinton administration was denying, and the Clinton hearings that Hillary was the chief witness denied it, and yet later documents turned up showing that they knew it. In any case, what about the depleted uranium? What about the munitions? So in the filming in Fallujah, a group of doctors gave us thousands of photographs. And you look at them, and they're so horrific, you want to turn away. Babies born with one eye in the middle of the forehead. Babies born with no brain in their skull. Babies born with two heads. And we're not talking about a few. We're talking about an epidemic. So many so that this is going back over 10 years ago. The doctors were telling parents, don't have any more kids, because they had never seen anything like this in Iraq's history. I went ahead and I included a group of these in the film. Yes, it was shocking, and yes, it was heart-rending to watch this, but I felt, how can we be so merciless? Do we have hearts of stone that we are willing to allow Iraqi women and their children to suffer without any sense of commitment to exposing why they're doing it and helping them? It was the Clintons who were responsible for a lot of this, because they had put the depleted uranium in there. Bush and others would go ahead and use it again, but the Clintons used it in the original war. So I wanted people to see that. In the audience was Michael Moore. And after it, he says, man, that was hard to watch. And I said, it may be hard for us to watch in a movie theater in the United States, New York City. Imagine how hard it is to watch when you're a doctor, a pediatrician, obstetrician, and you're delivering a child. And when the child comes out, you see a child that is formed for life, may not even live. And I want to remind people, This is from True Republica, August 3rd, 2016, Iraq. Think nothing can shock you anymore? Try this. Quote, as many as 576,000 Iraqi children may have died since the end of the Persian Gulf War because of economic sanctions imposed by the Security Council, according to two scientists who surveyed the country for Food and Agriculture Organization. The study also found steeply rising malnutrition among the young, suggesting that more children will be at risk in the coming years. The results of the survey will appear in the Friday's The Lancet, Journal of the British Medical Association. Now, here's what you're not aware of. When was that? That was 20 years ago. That's the consequences, the Clinton, Hillary and Bill Clinton's sanctions. So if you're going to go on television and if you're going to have a lot of women who say, we want a woman president, we want a woman who cares about women, do you care about these women? Do you care about 576,000 children who died because of what you and your husband did? Do you care about the children in Fallujah? What exactly do you care about? Which women are we talking about? Please listen to this.
The main hospital in Fallujah is newly opened, impressive, and built with American money. But it's hard to find the truth about birth defects even here. The Iraqi government doesn't encourage people to talk about it. The official version is that there is no real problem, just one or two more cases a year than the Iraqi average. People here told us the government doesn't want to cause any embarrassment for the Americans. So it takes courage to challenge the official version.
One case a week, do you see? Something like that?
No. Two to three cases per day.
Three cases a day?
Yes, mainly cardiac defects.
What is it that's happened in Fallujah that means that these birth defects exist in such numbers?
I am a doctor. I have to be scientific in my talk. I have no proof and I have nothing documented. But I can tell you that year by year, the number is increasing.
And the sudden rise began after the fighting in 2004. We got some idea of the scope of the problem at a disability clinic. Staff feel swamped physically and emotionally. The director shows me dozens of photographs, a terrible record of suffering. There's one of a baby born with three heads. Many others are too dreadful to show. Rubble from buildings the Americans bombed was bulldozed into the river. Local people still get their drinking water from here. It's one possible cause for the birth defects. Now officials are advising women not to have children at all. Fallujah, strongly Sunni Muslim, was a major center of resistance to the Americans. The fiercest fighting happened here in Al-Julan, and this is where the worst cases are found now. This little girl has six fingers on each hand, six toes on each foot. In this house, all three small children have serious birth defects. The two boys are partially paralyzed. The little girl has brain damage. Their mother blames the Americans. Until there's a proper independent investigation, we won't know if she's right. But what's certain is that thousands of children in this place have been terribly, cruelly damaged. John Simpson, BBC News, Fallujah.
And that's recent. Mind you, my report on Fallujah came 12 years or 10 years before that. So will there be a report? Will there be an independent investigation? Not in your lifetime, there won't. Finally, before we rush out to vote for either Hillary or Trump or a third-party candidate such as Jill Stein, understand that one of Ronald Reagan's foremost policy advisors, Bruce Bartlett, once wrote, if Obama were white and a registered Republican, he'd be a conservative hero. Look at militarism. Obama, think of this, is our worst economic situation in 2008 and 10. Obama surpassed Bush and Reagan in defense spending with the largest combined budget since World War II. Special operation forces were notably increased and deployed to more than 75 countries under Obama, contributing significantly to degradation of arms, deregulation of arms export to the weapons market. Hillary, as Secretary of State, conducted many dealing in these arms based upon helping U.S. corporate weapons sales to other countries, mainly in Africa and the Gulf. Obama and Hillary and Bill Clinton are virtually the same with respect to Wall Street and corporate cadres and private interests they brought into government. Secrecy, Obama immediately coming into office with Eric Holder, adopted an all-Bush argument that would discard legal cases against the government and thereby expanding the definition and context of state secrets. Also has expanded legal language and bills to increase warrantless spying. Hillary, her entire career as Secretary of State, was shrouded in her own secret activities to benefit the Clinton family and her foundation. In the debate, Sanders said he would end the National Security Agency spying. Hillary Clinton would not. Both Hillary Clinton and Obama declared the Paris Climate Summit a success, but it wasn't. And anyone who had a reality check on the environment realized that neither Obama nor Clinton would mandate that there be a worldwide environmental renewable effort. Both were pro-nuclear, pro-coal, and pro-gas hydrofracking. In fact, Obama, with offshore drilling, and Hillary have spoken both in favor of defending the hydrofracking. Obama is cozy with nuclear power companies. In 2006, he altered the language in the bill to protect companies from making nuclear leaks secret from the public. That company was Exelon, same friendly company of the Clintons and Rahm Emanuel, who was his former secretary or the head of his White House. David Axelrod was a consultant to Exelon and a pro-nuclear official. They both are pro-GMOs. They both support Monsanto. Obama signed the DARC Act. Hillary was a speaker at a big ag conference showing support for GMOs. They are both big free trade, both NAFTA. She, because her and her husband helped pass it, he in defense of it, and they both supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TTIP. And they both believe in prosecuting whistleblowers and journalists that leak the truth. And Obama, more people he has indicted on treason charges than all the presidents combined. And Hillary Clinton would throw the book at Assange and Snowden. Both believe in assassinating U.S. citizens without due process. And this was an expansion upon what Bush had started. The president has the authority to decide who is guilty without due process. They don't have to do anything except decide to kill them. And in Hillary Clinton's leaked emails, it exposes her support of Obama's assassination policies. They both support the Patriot Act and warrantless surveillance. So in election funding, neither one wants corporate money taken out of elections. So here is my question. What if nothing was what it was supposed to be? What if the deal was made that after Obama became president, everything that the Clintons had built would stay in place? She became Secretary of State. Have you asked why? When you look at the rhetoric used against him during the election, why? Who was his head of his Council on Economic Advisors? Clinton's, Larry Summers. How about trade representatives? How about the Michael Taylor at the FDA? How about Vilsack? How about all these appointments? They were all Clintons. So what you really had is you had an Obama in the White House, but Clintons and their ideologues in a lot of control of the larger apparatuses of government and the agencies. So it really was irrelevant which one of the two Democrats you got. You got the same philosophy. And that's what we haven't been paying attention to. I think we should. Let's go to my guest standing by, James Grundvig. He is an investigative journalist who specializes in covering stories concerning modern technology. He's the author of many articles and some books, including Master Manipulator, the explosive true story of fraud, embezzlement, and government betrayal at the CDC, with a foreword by Robert Kennedy Jr. Nice to have you with us today, James.
Hi, Gary. How you doing?
Good. For those who have seen my documentary, Silent Epidemic, there is a short segment that goes into the fraud and corruption of a Danish researcher hired by the CDC who manipulated research that would indicate that mercury in vaccines is not associated with autism. That researcher, Paul Thorsen, is today a wanted fugitive by America's Department of Justice, and yet he lives freely in an open daylight in Denmark, and all efforts to bring him to justice by the U.S. law enforcement agencies have been obstructed by our government itself. Before we get into the Thorsen main crimes, why he is an important asset to the CDC, and what this example tells us about the corruption that infuses the halls of the CDC, I'd like you to first tell us about why his research was bogus. Because to this day, Thorsen's studies are still touted as scientific proof that thimerosal or mercury in vaccines are not associated with autism, and also explain to us why these kinds of cohort or epidemiological population studies that the CDC and our health agencies rely upon to deny a vaccine autism connection are not reliable, are not gold standard studies for drawing any truthful scientific conclusions about that. The forum is yours.
So there were two issues with those studies. One is they changed the different, parameters for the studies. They back-tested in Denmark. Denmark has a health register database on all their citizens. So they were able to go back to the 1990s, prior to 2000, and basically back-test data on autistic kids. But they had different age requirements, and so right off the bat, the studies weren't fair in that respect. What also we found out through Freedom of Information Act emails is we found out that Colleen Boyle, who today is the director of the National Centers for Birth Defects and Disabilities, she basically gave marching orders to her understudy, CDC, and then on to Paul Thorsen to eliminate the entire 2001 year because it showed an association. So not only did they massage, manipulate the data, they also eliminated the entire birth year because they didn't like the results. So that's one problem. What's interesting about Colleen Boyle is she was involved in the 1980s with Agent Orange. Congress gave CDC 7 years and $71 million in 5 years, and leaving $20 million on the table, they walked away from it on purpose because they didn't want to find association between dioxin and hundreds of thousands of Vietnam vets that were affected by Agent Orange. And so she today was, since nothing happened to her during the Reagan administration, she went on and up the CDC ladder, and she used that template for the autism vaccine debate. And they're using it today with Zika as well. It's quite extraordinary.
Tell us your opinion of Zika then.
Zika is, we're finding out from Brazil, what I kind of suspected for quite a while, is Zika is not the cause of microcephaly down in Brazil, at least not by itself. In fact, the clusters of microcephaly are still only in northeast Brazil. It's not anywhere else in Brazil. You go 100 miles west of northeast Brazil into the jungle, which is called mosquito country. There is no microcephaly babies there at all. So now they know it's Zika plus another cofactor. Is it a virus like a measles outbreak they had? Or is it a man-made toxin that's in the larvicide, pesticide? Is it the GM mosquitoes, genetically modified mosquitoes? That was the first program ever, was launched right in that area. And by those mosquitoes feasting on sugarcane, because glyphosate is a pesticide that's Monsanto or whatever in that part of the world. So now that is being investigated down there. But what we're not hearing here from the WHO, CDC or NIH is the truth. They still refuse to come out and acknowledge that Brazil no longer believes it's Zika by itself. And yet we got this fear-mongering going on in the United States, which is, if you read the papers recently, is going to impact Florida's $90 billion tourism industry. It's going to impact tourism down in Puerto Rico. And it's also now China's looking to make the United States exporters fumigate each container of exports going to China, which will cost them $150, $200. That came out yesterday in the Wall Street Journal. So this is quite extraordinary that the CDC is allowed to dictate to the American people basically a false narrative on what's going on.
What can you tell us, going back to Thorson, as a qualified researcher in vaccinology and epidemiology, allegedly, and when people like yourself and others describe him as a con man, is there any evidence that the CDC itself is complicit in the crimes he's accused of? For example, tell us about the emails received under the Freedom of Information Act that show the CDC and health officials were complicit in this junk science to hide a vaccine-autism connection.
In fact, yes. And so in my book, I have several of those emails quoted with dates, names on it, everything from, you know, direction from the CDC itself. What happens if we eliminate this? What happens if we change the parameters of that? So those emails are in the book for sure. What also happened was interesting. Paul Thorson was sort of like the accidental tourist. The CDC has a foreign scientist program, right? They come over here and stuff. So he was in the CDC in 99. He starts dating one of the executives in the CDC named Dinah Shandell, who now works at Thorson's old university that he was kicked out of in Denmark. So she does her 20 years of retirement. She goes over there to collect not only the CDC pension, but to continue her autism research over in Denmark. It's quite extraordinary. So Thorson was interesting. He was really good at, I guess, sleeping with people, really good at getting the CDC to give him $8 million, and it eventually would have been 16 had he not been caught. That would have been fascinating. He was very good at securing money. And Dinah Shandell certainly helped him, I guess, write the right budgets, say the right things in these different requests. And the CDC needed Denmark at the time. They wanted to quickly disassociate the thimerosal autism angle in vaccines. And so the fastest way to do it was the back test, as opposed to do a real study, which they've never done, which is to study vaccinated children and unvaccinated children. They've never done that study. So it's pretty amazing what Thorson did. So on top of that, I was able to crack, there were three people involved. There was Paul Thorson, Dinah Shandell from the CDC, directly involved, that is, and she was getting orders from Colleen Boyle and others, and Christian Madsen. So Matt Madsen was a PhD student at the time at Thorson's University in Aarhus. It's a city outside of Copenhagen, 3 hours outside. And Madsen was a PhD student, so he was under a lot of pressure to produce certain things. So I threatened to make Madsen famous in my book. I was going to make Paul Thorson famous, and he cracked and talked to me, and he went on a record in the book and in emails to me and in phone conversations that Paul Thorson never did any of the work in the studies. Now, what's odd about that, the Vancouver Protocol on peer review studies, an international protocol standard, you are supposed to do some work, whether it's to review the paper at the end or whatever. He never did anything. So his name's on it technically make those studies null and void. So what I intend to do this fall, there's a government body in Denmark called the Danish Committee of Scientific Dishonesty, and I will file a formal complaint, and I'll have them review those studies, because I had the university kind of answer my questions, but didn't want to answer those specific questions about Paul Thorson. And those studies are, yes, 15 years old, but they should be null and void because he didn't do any work, number one, on top of them being corrupt studies. So I'm going to go after that this way. So that's my next move as far as this book's concerned.
There's one other character here, Colleen Boyle, because in the hearings that were held under oath before Congress, the CDC repeatedly lied by saying that there was no evidence there was a connection between vaccines and autism. And one of the people who was doing most of the defense of the CDC was Colleen Boyle, and she's the one who referred that the expert had found in many studies that there was no connection. And so take a look at her, because up to this point, no one knew anything about her background.
And again, I would suspect she might end up retiring with a new president in 2007. I would suspect that. I mean, she's been involved in the CDC since 1984, so that's more than 30 years. She, as I mentioned earlier, was a principal investigator, so she was the lead person in the Agent Orange studies. She was the one that decided not to go from Atlanta or even Washington, D.C., up to Pennsylvania to the Army archives that would have matched Operation Ranch Hand flight patterns to the troop movements on the ground. They refused to do that. So they decided to quit the study instead. So if you actually went online and searched for the 101st Congress, they called the Agent Orange cover-up. There's 6 dissenting senators involved in that 50-page document. They basically blow the CDC away. But the CDC has not changed. So the opportunity to have dressed down Colleen Boyle in 1990 never happened. And she was allowed to go move up the ladder and became a big-time person, and she's now the director of the NCB-DDD, which was created under Bill Clinton in 2000, because birth defects and children were exploding, and part of that's because of the autism epidemic. And by the way, my son is 16 years old. He is autism. He also was one of the 5,000 cases kicked out of vaccine court with thimerosal, so that's my disclosure on my end.
Okay, but she also was part of the cover-up, I believe, or the alleged cover-up, when William Thompson found that there was a 324% increase in autism in African-American boys under the age of 36 months getting the MMR vaccine. And Thompson is alleged to have said to Brian Hooker, yeah, we all knew about it, and they all brought their records to his office with black garbage bags, and they purged everything. In other words, they were engaged in obstruction of justice. They were destroying evidence. He had a sense of guilt that what if this ever comes up under freedom of information or what I'm asked to testify? He kept a copy. So shouldn't she be brought into this cover-up of the autism?
She's part of that cover-up as well. She was involved in both the domestic cover-up, which is the Thompson, or they left out several hundred or 40 or 50% of the African-American kids in order to show that no association again. This is what the CDC does best. They find out the truth. They don't like the truth. They eliminate part of the pool. They shorten it. Whatever they do, they play around with the parameters of the study, and they come up with a false narrative. So not only did they destroy data, but they falsified data. And Thompson does have that. And I look forward to the day that he's actually subpoenaed in some court case where they force him in. And yes, Colleen Boyle was definitely her name is not on that study, but she definitely gave direction to the people that were involved, which is Frank DiStefano and Thompson and a couple of other people. I think two others.
She was also
involved directly with the five Danish studies that cooked data on thimerosal and the MMR triple shot vaccine as well, doing the same exact thing, which is to find no association. And so those 6 studies were used to kick out my son and 5,000 other baby does cases from vaccine court without ever being heard, which is a disgrace in a different kind of way.
Is it not possible for Congress to bring her in because she lied before Congress, which is perjury?
That is interesting. I'd have to go back and read through her testimony. I know under oath, in being grilled by Congressman Bill Posey out of Florida, he asked her point blank under oath, did you ever do a study that shows vaccinated versus unvaccinated? And after a long dance, she eventually admitted, no, the CDC has never conducted such a study.
That's not true.
So CDC has never done a study comparing vaccinated versus unvaccinated. Basically, you think of any kind of FDA study on new medicine. Does people take the actual medicine, other people take the placebo? Well, they've never done that study on vaccinated kids.
They've done studies, but their placebo is always another vaccine.
Correct.
They've never done it based upon a gold standard of a sugar pill or a saline solution. That they haven't done.
That they've never done.
Okay, now, just a quick question.
Yep.
Do you have any evidence at all that the pharmaceutical industry is working with the CDC and the White House to prevent Posey's extremely explosive evidence of corruption at the CDC going clear up Gerberding.
I do not have actual evidence yet, but I'm working on it. I'm working on two things. I'm working on evidence for that they basically have tied Posey's hands for the last 2 years. No, you know, CDC, clearly the CDC, NIH, FDA all work for Big Pharma. There's no question about that. Right, Gerberding was the director of the CDC from 2002 to 2009. She left when Obama came in January 2009. In fact, I believe if you look at through the indictment on Paul Thorsen, he basically was stealing money from the CDC with forged invoices. He had actually a CDC bank account. He had a federal bank account in the United States in Atlanta, one of the three CDC branches down there. And he stole more than $1 million. And if you look through what he stole, his last two withdrawals were basically Halloween. It was the 29th of October of 2008. He forged a check, and he also did something else. And he was able to get $60,000 or $70,000 combined for the day, just for his personal use. I guess he thought the gig was up. And what's interesting, if you read through my book, you'll find out that there was a new director at his university, Aarhus University, came in April of 2009, April 1st. Paul Thorsen got outed, I believe, by Gerberding. I don't have proof on that, but I believe the timing's there. She leaves the CDC. She has someone in the CDC contact Aarhus University and spill the beans on Paul Thorsen. Investigations open up there. In February, by March, he resigns from the university, so he's never officially kicked out. But he still, for the next year, kept on his resume, he's still working for Aarhus University, which wasn't true, obviously.
And also, if the United States government wanted to bring him back, they could, because after all, the CDC can be overridden. Final question for you, yes or no. Do you believe that the CDC has, for all intents and purposes, overall, been operating as a criminal organization for the past many years?
That's something I actually discussed with my publisher. Tony Lyons is also a good friend of Bobby Kennedy Jr. And we're looking collectively with some lawyers that are also parents of autistic children, looking at a possible racketeering. We need more evidence, but if we find it, we're going to go after them that way. They certainly behave like that. Do I have evidence of it? Not absolutely, but we're still digging.
Okay. James, good luck on your investigations. The book is called Master Manipulator, The Explosive True Story of Fraud, Embezzlement, and Government Betrayal at the CDC. The website is James, I'll spell the last name, GRUNDVIG.com. And we look forward to more as his investigations continue to unfold the truth. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest,